Is that how you could tell that you were becoming proficient with your sinner when you could finally have a civil conversation with your teenager, right? When he was at his worst, that the lessons from Aikido transferred to this more relational aspect. Can you tell us that story or what that means today?
Teenagers are kind of hard on their parents. And I was the same way. But Aikido, one of the most important ideas of Aikido, I think, is receiving, because it's a balance. To be centered is about being balanced in the world. And so I refer to that symbol that probably everybody has seen of yin and yang. It's the circle with the kind of wavy line that separates light from dark, with a dot in each one of the opposite contrast. And so that's where you want to be. That's what the do is all about, the way, the pathway, a way of being, a way of seeing the world. And so the longer you practice this, the more that just becomes automatic in you as you recreate yourself. Through these different misogi practices, you throw out old stuff, you throw out your fears, you throw out the anger, and you just get to a place where none of that really matters anymore. And so you can just look at something being offered to you, and it could be an argument, it could be a gift, it could be a piece of behavior, could be somebody taking your right of way, and you just receive. And so when I could just sit and listen to what my son was saying to me, without all of the intervening overlays entering in, it was much easier to deal with him. I wasn't trying to over control. I wasn't trying to manipulate him. I wasn't trying. I was just receiving him. And then, as we went along, we could have a conversation about something and come to a solution that both of us could deal with. And then life was much better. And that can happen with work partners, husbands, fathers, mothers, shopkeepers, because those are all prime places where people find conflict. And Aikido is the penultimate art of conflict resolution.
Would you say Aikido then is a defensive art versus an aggressive art, or what? How should we speak about that?
That's a good question. Thank you for asking it. And because I wouldn't have thought to bring it up, but it really is very critical. Martial arts are viewed as arts of conflict, and Aikido doesn't neatly fit into that category. But what I'd like to say is that at the beginning, Aikido students are taught that Aikido is a receptive art. And that often translates as just reactionary, so that there has to be some attack, some conflict presented to you that you get to work on through Aikido. And that's a fine way for people to begin, because especially in this country, in the United States, people have enough conflict in their bodies when they come in. They're all ready to do something to another person. They're not in a position where, most of the time anyway, they can be receptive. That's something I found after so many years of teaching to be kind of the prime starting point, is to teach people, like I learned how to do with my son, how to just receive, how not to bring all this stuff and try to control something, but just to receive. And so that's a difficult lesson that has to do with beginner's mind. And that has to do with being yin, as in the yin and yang, receptive. So most Aikido students find that that's what the teaching is as they begin. It's just to get them to take that step. But it doesn't mean that Aikido is a receptive art, because what you learn in more advanced levels is that you control the first move, so that you can present the situation in such a way that you elicit a kind of, you can draw out of a person a kind of response that you can then use to do something else. So you can kind of see what's coming. You do enough of these things and you kind of see what's coming. I never really wanted to be around people punching me, but that's what happens in Aikido class. And
yeah,
at first, you know, I didn't like it at all. But I mean, they were very nice people, so I didn't let that scare me. I was just a little uncomfortable, and so I tighten up and step back. And these are all, you know, responses that were in me for other reasons that I had to work through. And they're good things to work through. And so after a while, I got used to punches. And then I got used to people with a sword in their hand coming with a punch-like movement. And then it just didn't matter anymore. It was just a movement. And I could tell a lot of things. I could tell how fast they were coming, how hard they were coming, you know, how far, how long it would take for them to come. Once you start working with that, then you begin to become skillful at reading a lot of the things around that.
I've seen an Aikido demonstration where I suppose a master's in the center and there's others around her coming in for the attack. And there's just so much stillness and grace, even what it seems like in such a fast-paced moment, it also seems timeless at the same time. So it really caught my attention.
It's like a hurricane or a tornado, you know, where the center is the calm place. And then everything moving around is very active. And that's really what you want to learn how to do in Aikido, is to be that stillness. That's mm-hmm. that receptive point where you can okay. just receive what's coming. Because if you've got stuff and desires to control, then you're going to be in constant conflict with all of these other forces swirling around you. But if you're receptive, you can use them. And I found it immediately useful, because if you allow yourselves to, this is the Aiki part, if you allow yourselves to align with the forces coming in, and instead of thinking you have to stop them or control them or overpower them, then you become strong without having to do much of anything. I like to say to students that Aikido people are really lazy, you know, because they just use the power coming in instead of having right. to produce all of it.
What a gift to be able to get there. I know. Yeah. But you do also have another story of when you were teaching, I don't know what school system, but on your first day of class, you had two disruptive tough guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And your students, and you brought them into you. How did you do that?
Well, that's a very good example of controlling the first move. And I wasn't a brand new teacher. I had taught for 8 years in the California State University Fullerton campus. And I had switched campuses. So now I was going to teach at the Cal State University, same system, but in Los Angeles. So it's sort of an inner city campus. And I went to my classroom in Martin Luther King Hall. And it was an ethics class I was supposed to teach. And so once I opened the door, though, I was just astounded, because there were these, small women that were hiding under the desk that they were sitting at. And there were these two gigantic guys, very muscled. And they were just having a great time intimidating everybody in the, it wasn't class time yet, but intimidating everybody in the room. I thought I smelled alcohol, but I wasn't sure. But, you know, that kind of thing. They were going back and forth and just really raising the fear level of all the other students in the class. And I walk in. And I was taking Aikido at that time. I wasn't, maybe I was a third year Aikido student or something. But I went up to the podium and my inner self said, you better get control of this, because if you don't, you know, you're going to be chasing this class. So how do you get control of it? And I knew that one of the prime things to do is to create a distraction. So if you create a distraction, then everything that's set in place going along that activity stops to attend to the distraction that's coming in. So I had to say something kind of unexpected. And so I said, will two very strong people come up and help me with the demonstration? And of course, everybody else was not going to volunteer for that, because these two were obviously the strongest guys in class. And they thought that was great, because they would get more attention, and then they could maybe put it to me, you know, at that time, a petite woman philosophy too. I was going to teach them ethics, right? They would have a heyday with me. And I had been practicing some exercises in my class, my Aikido class. And when we would do demonstrations, I was always selected to do this because I was the smallest one in class. And it involves it involves controlling your center. We would call it keeping your one point.
Okay.
And so people couldn't like lift you off the ground. And so I thought, okay, I'll just do that. And then my inner self was saying, you're nuts. You know, if you fail at this, it's going to be all over.
Right.
I've done this so many times. I ought to be able to do it again. So I tried to go to that center that I keep talking about and just receive. And the way that we would do it in demonstrations is that I would allow two people to lift me up. They'd take my arms down by my wrists and lift my body up. And usually that isn't hard to do. People could lift me up quite high. And then the next time I would invite them to lift me up, but I would go to my center and, like under a waterfall, maybe really attach myself to the ground. Just think down. Everything
okay.
was down so that they couldn't get me up off the ground. And that really would bother people right then, you know, especially strong guys. And the third time I'd have them lift me up. And then when I was at the top, and this only an advanced student can do, then I would go into that thinking down mindset. And then I'd bring them down to the ground, off into their knees. And this so astounded these two troublemakers that they would just do anything I asked after that. And they were my greatest students that semester. I was lucky it all worked out.
And to speak to your principal, you invited them into this moment where you knew perhaps what you were going to do. And it happened.
Right. It was a great distraction. I needed to start them over again to get them to look at me in a different way. And so it worked, and they did.
I'm speaking with Susan Perry, author of The Hidden Power of Aikido. If you want to learn more about her work, go to susanperry.info, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. We're talking today with Susan Perry in The Power of Aikido. Susan, I'm wondering if you can walk us back a little bit towards Sensei's original intention of what he wanted to communicate with Aikido, and how that is applicable to the modern world that we're living in today.
Okay. Sensei is a great visionary, and I've spent many years writing books and articles about him, trying to get people to see him as the visionary that he was, instead of just a revered Japanese martial arts teacher. And so that's really the purpose of this book that I wrote. It's not for Aikido students. It's for the general public. And I thought, you know, a lot of people want to go into an Aikido dojo and practice the moves, but a lot of people wouldn't do that. But Aikido has this tremendous philosophy, and a lot of people who like to read books and think about things might become interested in Aikido from that point and seek out a dojo or seek out something similar. But he wanted world peace. You know, he's a man that lived through a couple of wars, fought in one Russo-Japanese war, and he didn't support World War II. He retired to his farm. He just, you know, he didn't want to see any of that. And so he was a realist. He knew we lived in a world of conflict. And but he saw more and more this art was a way of getting people first to cultivate themselves by the things that I've already been referring to, throwing off the inner issues and and our desire, you know, the barriers inside, and then learning how to deal with people in a joyful way, in a kind of calm way of resolving conflicts without anger and fear involved. And so that's really, the art is able to do all of that. And so he's given us a tool to use in creating a world where people can deal with one another without engaging in conflict. And I was a watcher of the Democratic National Convention program last night, and it just seems so relevant that, and I think that, you know, more and more over the years, these ideas are becoming a little more mainstream. They were very hard to teach at first because people saw the world as a world of conflict, and they thought that this was just kind of a woo-woo way of, you know, dealing with the world. Eastern stuff that isn't very realistic. But now you heard in that convention over and over people talking about joy, people talking about helping one another, and a lot of, you know, emphasis on families and giving people what they need, you know, to live a life of dignity and of not wealth, but of having sufficient tools to deal with what they have going on in their lives. And these are the ideas that O-sensei was trying to cultivate a long time ago after World War II in Japan.
We're having this conversation in August 2024, and it's true, the messages in the speeches last night were very inclusive, bringing everybody in, saying we're working for everybody here without this division. And so, again, without predicting this moment, O-sensei was making this call to love and protect all of us.
Right.
That we can't do it without each other, that there's a reverence for life itself.
And going back to beginner's mind or the here and now or being receptive, instead of judging people and putting them in categories, if we can just receive whatever is coming our way and deal with it without thinking, oh, this person is a such and such, they belong there, they don't do this. And, you know, these judgments get in the way, and they are things that need to be left behind so we can move forward in a harmonious world.
Are you pointing to O-sensei's idea of blending or breathing with our partner? He doesn't say enemy, but our partner, the breathing with.
Yeah, he never says enemy, but there was a teacher who would talk about the initial move being a move of inhaling your partner.
Inhaling, yes.
Yeah, and breath work is very important in Aikido. And so, you know, two people exhaling at the same time, that's going to be a kind of conflict. It's like two people attacking at the same time. But if one, it's this yin and yang again, right? We have active energies and we have receptive energies. And so if there's an active energy coming, then the balance is found in a receptive energy receiving. But then that changes and it goes back and forth. And in an Aikido technique, that might go back and forth several times during its duration, active and passive roles. And that's how people can move together. And so they can move as one. And so, e pluribus unum, right? I mean, that's what that was all about last night at the DNC. Yeah, just forgetting about all of our differences and realizing we're all humans. We're all wanting the same things, happiness and peace. And we all have certain needs. And, you know, we could just help one another with all of that. And everybody could be satisfied and the world would be better.
And within this idea, how does the ideas of being both fierce and compassionate coexist with one another?
Oh, that's an easy one. Of course, I've thought about it for a very long time.
Yes.
So, but when I realize, you know, when you look at a mama bear, who everybody is absolutely afraid of, especially if her babies are around, and if they're around you, then you can understand how compassion and ferocity are coming from the same thing. I mean, it's a different side, but the mother bear is wanting to protect her babies, right? And if she sees you as threatening in any way, then that ferocity, that protection, is just very scary. And so we have the same thing. Well, you know, if you looked at Kamala Harris, a couple of times in the speech she gave, when she was when her ire was getting up and she was showing how much she wanted to protect the United States and how forceful she was and drawing on all of her, you know, lawyerly and so forth, all of her accolades from the past, she would just really go to task for it. She was that concerned and protected.
Exactly.
And she will fight for us, right? That was the message over and over, not fight at us, but she would fight for
yes.
the continuation of democracy, fight with us. And so that's the ferocity. And that's the power you learn to bring up from a strong center to protect. It's a protective art. And then, of course, compassion is involved there, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. To continue talking about the gift of mother and this energy, you know, Maya, Kamala's sister, spoke of their mother very
right.
much, embodying this and doing this to model the way for them. There's that word again, the way, right? Modeling
the way.
The way.
Right, it is the way. And, you know, I was just really moved by all of the different politicians coming up and saying they were raised by a single mother. I mean, not everyone, but there was a lot of them. And that their mother had taught them these things about helping other people and being a good person and being honest. All of these kinds of things came from those single mothers, even though those mothers may have been struggling in their own life. They didn't come with hostility and bad words about people. They came with respect and with gratitude for what they did have, and they wanted to instill in their kids those kinds of qualities. That's the kind of cultivation that's important in raising a person or developing a person that could be a good citizen in the United States.
You just used this word honesty, right?
Right.
And you write about Makoto in the book and truthfulness and the importantness of this for being in one center as well.
One thing that struck me was that I didn't hear the word truth much in those speeches given those 4 days. I did watch it. I mean, there were so many other wonderful qualities being presented and qualities that did embody truth. But truth for a philosopher is really important. And honesty is being true to yourself and also being true and forthright with others. There's a figure, Fudomyo, in Japan's mythology, kind of a Buddhist figure. And he was very important to O-sensei. He was somebody that, you know, stand up for yourself, stand up for the truth. And he had under his feet, you know, a little symbolic figure of ignorance and so forth. And he's always cast in an aura of flames. It's true, you know, we need to stand up for ourselves. And when we're trying to do something that's right and defeat ignorance. So truth is there too, even though they don't talk about it.
And as we finish our dialogue here today, I want to talk about something, just what you bring up in the end of the book too, that either an intentional or unintentional byproduct of these practices is a joyful life.
Joyful life, yes. Yes, it is a joyful life. In my writings, I decided this little misogy I referred to at the beginning of our talk. I wanted to start the day not by watching news with a cup of coffee, but by going outside in my backyard where there's birds and plants and things like that, and just allow myself to receive those things. And that's joyful.
I've been speaking with Susan Perry, author of The Hidden Power of Aikido. If you want to learn more about her work, go to susanperry.info, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3823.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Anadea Judith, author of Charge in the Energy Body. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the vital key to healing your life, your chakras, and your relationships.
If a dog is man's best friend, then what makes you radio's best friend? Being a good listener. That's right. You're our best friend because you're always there for us, ready to listen and take action when the right moment arrives. And it's here. Answer the call and donate to CJSF's Fund Drive now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text Donate to 778-782-2573. Be radio's best friend.